Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 37, When, Where, and Who. Tonight, we're on the case in Frederick, Maryland, about an hour from Washington, D.C. A close-knit community was stunned when news broke that 15-year-old Stacy Hoffmaster had vanished off her front porch just moments after her mother had seen her there. Fear over what might have happened to the friendly high school freshman forced her family and police to consider many troubling possibilities. But the reality of what actually happened was far worse than any of them could have imagined. Wednesday, October 2nd, 1996. It was a cold, crisp afternoon in Maryland when a call came in to the Frederick Police Department. On the line was Vicki Hoffmaster. She was frantic because her 15-year-old daughter, Stacy, was missing. Detective Kevin Forrest.
She had not seen her daughter since the day prior. At around 1 o'clock, she had come home from work a little bit early, and Stacy was on the front porch of their house.
Deputy State's Attorney Nancy Hamm.
Stacy was skipping school that day, so they sort of met eyes. She pulled into the back of the house where the parking area was, and by the time she had come out to the front of the house, Stacy was gone.
That afternoon, Stacy's family believed the teenager had left to avoid a confrontation with her mother over cutting school. Stacy's brother, Chris Hoffmaster.
I wasn't worried because I just figured maybe she had went off with a friend and decided to stay at their house for a night.
But Stacy's brother and the rest of her loved ones began to worry when they discovered that none of Stacy's friends had heard from her. Even her boyfriend Alfie hadn't seen her since they had lunch together the afternoon she disappeared.
Alfie told us that they picked up their lunch. Stacy got chicken nuggets, french fries, and a soda. After they got their food, they walked back to Stacy's house. They actually ate their lunch on Stacy's porch.
Stacy's mother had come home just minutes after that lunch was over. Alfie claimed he had already gone back to work and had made plans to see Stacy later that afternoon.
He told Stacy they would see each other when he got off work at around 3 o'clock, and she agreed to meet him.
But when 3 o'clock rolled around, Stacy didn't show up. Investigators searched Stacy's home and front yard for anything that might explain her disappearance. But there was nothing that indicated what had happened to her or where she had gone.
What was on the stoop was the McDonald's wrappers from what she had eaten. That was it.
With no evidence of an abduction, police weren't sure a crime had even been committed.
It made sense that she walked away. Her mother was clearly mad.
There were no indications of any wrongdoing at the time.
But a closer examination revealed evidence that made the theory that Stacy had left on her own harder to accept.
If she had run away voluntarily, she would have taken some clothes. She would have taken her book bag. She would have taken her wallet. You know, everything of hers was there.
The mysterious missing persons investigation quickly became big news in Frederick, and police received dozens of tips from people who believed they had actually seen Stacy alive and well. Detectives ran down every lead, but none led to the whereabouts of the missing teenager. As the weeks turned into months, many feared that the search for Stacy Hoffmaster would end in tragedy.
It was a lot of worrying and wondering where she could be, when she's going to come home.
Then, 3 months after Stacy went missing, two men walking in the nearby woods made a shocking discovery.
Two local men were in this area looking for aluminum cans. They came across a blue blanket lying on the ground. It was weighed down by several stones. It caught their attention. They went over, they lifted the blanket up, and they discovered the remains of a human female.
It was clear the young woman had been the victim of a savage, sexually motivated attack.
She was bound at the hands and at the feet, and they found a ligature around her throat, and she also had a sock that was protruding from her mouth.
Even the most experienced investigators were shocked by what they saw.
That's so out of context for Frederick and for our area. We just didn't experience things like that here. I'm sure it took a while to absorb that and to really determine the magnitude of what they were dealing with.
The victim was naked and unrecognizable, her clothing scattered nearby.
They found blue sweatpants and a blue sweatshirt that had a fire department logo on them. A pair of Fila sneakers.
Her underwear were recovered in the general area, and they later recovered her bra that was just a slight distance away.
The clothing and the rope the young woman had been bound with were collected as evidence. Detectives closely examined the rope. Detective Jorge Garcia.
It was a yellow nylon rope that you would use for camping or boating.
And at the end of the ropes, there was these nails. The type of nails that they used to nail in railroad ties.
They also could have been used as stakes to secure a tent. Police paid careful attention to the quilted blanket that was used to conceal the young woman's body.
It was a blue mover-style blanket, kind of heavy.
The blanket had a distinct tear mark running down one side. Investigators then looked for anything that could help them identify the young victim.
They searched the area. There was nothing on scene that they could use immediately to identify her.
But prosecutor Nancy Hamm, who had just begun her career at the district attorney's office, believed she knew who had been found. The sweatpants and sweatshirt found at the crime scene were a match to the one Stacy had been wearing the afternoon she disappeared.
I remember thinking, it's got to be Stacy Hoffmaster.
And the prosecutor's worst fear was confirmed when the medical examiner's report came back.
Stacy had a bone abnormality in her foot, so they had x-rays. They were able to compare the x-rays to x-rays that the ME had taken and were able to confirm her identity that way.
The autopsy ultimately painted a terrifying picture of the teenager's last moments alive. The murder weapon had been a thin piece of rope found around Stacy's neck.
They ruled that the cause of death was asphyxiation by strangulation, ligature.
The rope that was used to strangle her was tied almost like a noose. It was so tight. The medical examiner said he had to actually cut it off. It was tiny, like he pulled it that tight. It just made me sick.
Other injuries Stacy suffered help investigators sharpen their theory of how the sadistic attack unfolded.
She had a pretty bad contusion to her forehead, and the medical examiner said it would have made her woozy. And it would have made it very difficult for her to fight.
And biological evidence confirmed that Stacy had been sexually assaulted. The autopsy also revealed another important detail. Undigested food in Stacy's stomach provided critical information about when the attack happened.
They found a starchy material that was consistent with French fries, and we knew she had had French fries as part of her meal from McDonald's.
The findings helped those on the case narrow down the time frame of when Stacy's murder could have taken place.
It usually takes between an hour to up to 3 hours to digest food. And we knew that she had eaten lunch at around 12 to 12:30.
Based on the evidence, it appeared that Stacy was killed the day she disappeared. In fact, police were confident Stacy's murder had happened between 1 p.m. and 3 that afternoon. While the details were important to the investigation, they wouldn't help detectives with the grim task that came next: informing Stacy's family that their search had ended in the worst way possible. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Chris Hoffmaster was just 14 years old when his brother delivered the devastating news that his sister's body had been found.
He just looked over at me and told me, you know, Stacy's dead, and I immediately just ran and cried. I was just so upset.
Even though Stacy had been missing for 3 months, Chris had continued to hold out hope that they would find her alive and unharmed.
In those months of waiting, I never once thought she could be dead. I remember going and buying her Christmas gifts, because it was right around Christmas time of when they found the body.
Stacy's family was shattered by the news of her murder. Stacy's cousin, Brittany Stone.
Our family was devastated. It was really hard for them. I could see it. Things were different.
Even though he was young, Chris tried to stay strong as he watched his family struggle to cope with their unimaginable pain.
Just trying to be there for my family and my mother especially.
In his quiet moments alone, Chris was tormented by his final conversation with his sister. It had taken place at the bus stop on the morning of her murder.
Right before the bus came, she had said she had to get something from home. And I just had a weird feeling of sadness. And I remember saying, are you serious? And she said, yeah, I'll see you on the bus at the end of the day. And I asked her, I said, are you sure? And she said, yes.
But in the end, his biggest regret was simply not telling her how much she meant to him.
I wish I would have given her a hug and told her I love her.
Chris will always treasure his memories of his beloved older sister.
She was very big-hearted, very kind, very outgoing. She would help anybody that needed help.
As investigators listened to her family describe Stacy, they were forced to consider if someone had taken advantage of the teenager's compassionate nature to lead her into harm's way. Investigators retraced the teenager's last known whereabouts, in particular, her last lunch date with her boyfriend, Alfie. They brought him in for questioning and focused on every minute of his timeline during the three-hour window in which Stacy was killed, especially what happened after the couple finished eating lunch on Stacy's porch. Detective Kevin Forrest.
The last conversation they had was that she would meet him at his place of employment when he got off work at 3 o'clock.
Alfie told police he was worried when Stacy didn't arrive. Deputy State's Attorney Nancy Hamm.
He waited for Stacy at 3 o'clock at the corner where she was supposed to meet him. 10 minutes went by and he thought, you know, where is she?
Alfie walked to Stacy's house and spoke with her brother Chris, who had just gotten home from school. Chris says Alfie asked where his sister was.
I said, she's not here. He looked like he was getting a little worried, so he asked me to borrow my bike. He was probably gone maybe 10 minutes. Came back and said, I didn't find her. If she comes home, tell her I'm at work. Please to come see me. And I said, okay.
Alfie claimed that his search for Stacy made him late for his second job, which started at 3:30 p.m.
He ended up getting to work about 3:50.
Investigators felt the biggest problem with Alfie's story was that there was no way to confirm that Stacy had not actually gone to meet him that afternoon.
He admitted that she was to come see him.
And while investigators explored Alfie's story, police were getting pressure from the community to solve the disturbing case. Detective Jorge Garcia.
The community was appalled. They wanted answers and they wanted them quick. People were alarmed.
Everybody was upset. They always just wondered, are they ever going to find him? How do you just do something like that and get away with it?
Stacy had been killed within hours of when she and her boyfriend Alfie had their last lunch together. And now, all of Alfie's actions during the time she was missing were being viewed in a different light. Investigators wondered if there was a reason he had spent weeks trying to convince them that Stacy was still alive.
He kept reporting sightings to the police, and they were having a very hard time confirming these sightings. He was putting up signs everywhere, and they didn't know if he was sort of sending them on wild goose chases. It created suspicion.
But perhaps the most troubling concerns were raised by those closest to Stacy. Her brother Chris thought it was possible that Alfie could have been involved in his sister's murder.
I had thoughts that it could have been him.
And the friends painted a portrait of a jealous boyfriend who constantly questioned Stacy about other men.
The reports were coming in from Stacy's friends that she and Alfie were going through a hard time. They were arguing a lot.
Those working the case believed that jealousy could have been the motive for the crime.
When they learned about the possibility that their relationship wasn't going very well, well, of course, he was going to be a person of interest.
The fact that he admitted that she was to come see him when he got off of work, the reports that they had been having some problems at the time, all of those things combined just raised a possible motive with investigators.
Still, in the face of intense questioning, Alfie repeatedly denied any involvement in the crime and stuck to his story about what he had done that day. Investigators asked him to take a polygraph. The results only added to the detective's suspicions.
There were signs of deception in his polygraph.
Alfie immediately became the prime suspect in Stacy's murder. But detectives didn't have any physical evidence linking him to the crime.
The only thing they had really was the theory, and they had a polygraph. And the polygraph, regardless whether it can be used or not, does make someone very guilty if you fail it.
When police turned up the pressure even further, Alfie stopped cooperating.
They then got a search warrant and took his DNA. After his DNA was taken, he lawyered up.
Detectives knew Alfie had an intimate relationship with Stacy, which meant a DNA match with the evidence might not seal their case. So they continued to work hard to find a crack in his timeline.
Investigators were still working to follow Alfie's tracks and determine if he even had the ability to commit that crime. That's not something that could be left alone. We still had to verify and prove that either he did have the ability or he did not have the ability.
Investigators carefully mapped out Alfie's movements that afternoon.
From the time he left work at 3 o'clock till the time he punched in at his second place of employment, there were a lot of gaps in his time that needed to be accounted for.
Alfie eventually arrived at his second job at 3:50. That left a 50-minute window of time unaccounted for. Was it enough to have committed the heinous crime? Police carefully retraced every element of Alfie's alibi, verifying each step he claimed to have taken, and reached a stunning conclusion.
With the routes that he provided us, that left him less than 4 minutes that he could have had the opportunity to get to the woods, commit the crime, and still make it back to his place of employment.
There was no way that he could have traveled to that location, done that, and traveled back and punched back in. There was no way.
And any doubts that Alfie could have been responsible for Stacy's murder were removed when the crime lab returned its report. Alfie's DNA was not a match to the biological evidence recovered from the crime scene.
Given the fact that they were considered to be in a relationship and the fact that investigators at the time did believe that he was the last person that saw her, there was some level of surprise.
Police officially cleared Alfie as a potential suspect.
We could rule him out.
With Alfie cleared, the investigation was back to square one. Detectives returned to the crime scene, and it was a second, more comprehensive search of the area where Stacy's body had been found that revealed critical new evidence.
They realized that there was a campsite less than a half a football field from there.
Investigators noticed an abandoned tent held together with some very unusual materials.
The same type of ropes and nails hanging that matched what Stacy was tied in.
They also collected a tearing of blanket that matched the Blue Movers blanket that was recovered off of Stacy's body.
It looked like whoever had killed her had taken parts of that camp to tie her and cover her.
The litany of clues made answering a single question the top priority of the investigation.
Whose campsite was it?
Police questioned locals about who might have set up the campsite and learned that the area was often used for parties. And when they interviewed people who were familiar with those parties, one person immediately appeared on their radar.
There was one name that was mentioned, Lloyd Harris.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. Four-year-old Lloyd Harris was known as Frederick's local marijuana dealer. Detective Kevin Forrest.
Some called him the weed man.
Police informants said Harris often used the camping area to secretly conduct his business. And there was more. Some witnesses reported that Stacy may have known Harris.
There were several reports that she was familiar with him. One of Stacy's friends actually recalled a circumstance where Mr. Harris actually rode by on his bicycle and offered marijuana to them.
As police dug deeper, they found another, even more obvious link between Harris and Stacy Hoffmaster. Deputy State's Attorney Nancy Hamm.
He currently lived at his mom's house, which was coincidentally right around the corner from Stacy's house.
But there was nothing in the small-time pot dealer's background that indicated that he was capable of committing the horrific murder. His criminal background showed no history of violent behavior. He had been arrested for nonviolent misdemeanors.
Just minor offenses, nuisance-type crimes.
But Harris's connection to the campsite was a lead police had to follow up on.
It really raised some suspicions.
When detectives tracked down Harris, he seemed eager to cooperate with them. He admitted that he knew who Stacy was, but claimed they were not acquaintances.
He had indicated that, you know, he knew her from the area. He had indicated there was never any kind of contact with her.
Harris didn't deny that the makeshift tent police had found belonged to him.
He admitted it was his campsite. He said he had left there in July. He had been back one time to pick up some stuff that he left there, but that was the only time he had been back.
Harris claimed the tent had been left in the woods unattended for months. Detectives asked him about the torn blanket, rope, and nails found at the crime scene.
When he was shown that stuff, he said, "I mean, it looks like my stuff, but I had nothing to do with it."
Harris gave detectives a sample of his DNA and agreed to take a lie detector test, which he passed. As detectives waited for the results from the Maryland State Lab, they began to fear they were looking at the wrong man. But when Harris's DNA was compared to the biological evidence discovered during Stacy's autopsy, the results sent the case in an entirely new direction. Crime scene supervisor Sabrina Swan.
The DNA profile that was produced excluded anybody else except for him.
The results were damning.
When you get a DNA profile result that excludes anybody who's ever walked the face of the earth, that leaves without a doubt that the person whose DNA profile was compared, there's no other person that could have possibly deposited the DNA except for the suspect.
The DNA match contradicted everything Harris had told police.
Mr. Harris had initially said they never had any kind of contact and they only knew each other in passing.
Detectives brought Harris in for a second interview and confronted him with the powerful new evidence. With his back against the wall, Harris now had a new story to try and explain away his DNA found on Stacy.
He then admitted to investigators that he and Stacy had consensual sexual intercourse near Stacy's house on the Saturday before she went missing. He described that it was in exchange for marijuana.
Police were confident Harris was lying for a second time, but his story created a crucial problem. There was no way they could prove that consensual sex hadn't happened 3 days before Stacy's murder. In fact, Harris's new story was a major roadblock for prosecutors. No matter how unlikely it seemed, they believed it was possible that it would create enough reasonable doubt for the jury to acquit Stacy's neighbor. So despite all the evidence connecting Harris to the crime, prosecutors believed they couldn't move forward until they could refute Harris's claim that DNA found on Stacy's body had been the result of consensual sex 3 days before Stacy's murder.
She was murdered and raped there. Once the DNA came back, we just had to prove that it happened on that day with Harris. We had to disprove his version of the events, and we had to do it scientifically.
The intricacies of that decision-making were so complex that investigators weren't even able to fully explain it to Stacy's family, leaving her loved ones in the dark as to the status of the investigation. Stacy's brother, Chris Hoffmaster.
It was very frustrating, and it made me very angry. We just wanted answers, and we weren't getting them.
And neither were those working the case. For more than a decade, forensic experts believed it was possible the DNA could have been there for 72 hours. During that time, the case had stalled.
After about 15 years, I kind of went to the point of knowing that it might not ever be solved.
But a new analysis focused on the level of a specific enzyme within the sample called acid phosphatase. Normally, the body processes this enzyme very quickly following a sexual encounter. Experts knew the amount present 3 days later should be low. Advances in science allowed the enzyme to be tested for the first time. And the stunning results provided critical new information that strengthened their case against Harris.
These levels were extremely high. The only time you would get a level that high is within an hour or two.
The new findings made Lloyd Harris's story about when he had had sex with Stacy scientifically impossible.
He didn't have sex with her 3 days before.
In fact, the testing indicated Stacy had likely been murdered within minutes of when the DNA was left. Prosecutors believe the new evidence told a grim story of what really happened to Stacy Hoffmaster.
She had been raped right before she was killed.
There's absolutely no doubt that Lloyd Harris sexually assaulted Stacy and committed the murder.
Police tracked down the now 52-year-old Lloyd Harris in Kansas City, Missouri, and brought him in for questioning. Detective Garcia had a strategy to try to get him to talk.
Gain his trust. That's one of the big things, is try to get the person's trust. So that was one of the first things that I wanted to do, make him comfortable.
They pressed him for details about his makeshift tent in the woods.
Tell me about your camp.
I had found some tarps and whatnot and set up made like a little area that I can go.
Detectives then asked Harris about his relationship with Stacy.
Tell me about the girl. Did you know her?
Not really. I mean, I knew her. I mean, I've seen her around. You know, I talked to her. I knew her boyfriend. But, you know, as far as, like, we actually knew them, no.
In Harris's original interview, he denied having any interaction with Stacy. Then, after his DNA was found during her autopsy, he claimed he had had consensual sex with her in exchange for marijuana. This time, Harris added some details that led detectives to believe his crime could have been premeditated. Detective Jorge Garcia.
One of the things that drew my attention during the interview was that he had seen her in the backyard, and he's seen her around, and he's seen her walking with a boyfriend. That means he's watching her a lot. So that was a big thing. He was looking at her ahead of time.
But when investigators started to press him further, he played dumb.
Do you remember her name?
No, I don't.
You don't remember her name?
Detective Garcia couldn't help but become infuriated when Harris couldn't remember Stacy's name. To him, it signified one glaring truth.
This guy has, like, no remorse whatsoever.
Then investigators told Harris that the passage of time had worked against him.
Sometimes you have a certain amount of evidence, and as time progresses, what happens? Science progresses, correct?
Okay.
So we're now in that progression, and we're here to talk to you about that, but we want to get your side of the story.
Investigators then asked him point blank if he had anything to do with Stacy's murder. Once again, he denied any involvement.
I'm not the violent type. Killing somebody is not my thing.
But over the course of the interview, Harris moved closer and closer to a confession.
If it's accidental, it was accidental. This was a 15-year-old girl, okay? We need to put this to rest. This could haunt you for the rest of your life. If that's what it was, we need to know now.
If I did it, it was accidental. That's all I can say.
So you're telling me it was an accident?
I don't remember even doing it, is what I'm saying. I wish I could help you, man. I really do. If I did it, it had to be an accident.
Detectives were shocked. That statement sealed the deal for them.
That comment, if I did it, it was an accident, was huge for us. Innocent people don't make a comment like that.
Detectives tried to build a rapport with Harris to get more details.
Can you tell me a little bit about it?
I can't. I don't know anything about it. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Listen, you would not forget that. You would never forget that.
I agree.
You would never forget that.
I agree.
Right. What happened that day?
I don't know. There's really nothing more I can say, okay?
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. One years after the murder of Stacy Hoffmaster, Lloyd Harris finally faced justice. Detective Jorge Garcia.
You are under arrest.
You have the right to remain silent. You don't have to say anything to us or answer any questions.
Harris's arrest was welcome news for Stacy's family. Stacy's brother, Chris Hoffmaster.
I was home with my mom. She got a call from Detective Forrest, and he had told her that they made an arrest, but they wouldn't tell us who it was. I guess he wanted to tell us in person. So that's when they told us.
At first, the name Lloyd Harris didn't mean anything to Chris and his family.
You know, I wondered who the hell that guy was. Like, who was that guy? And then they showed us pictures of him when he was younger, and it hit me instantly. I knew who it was. I remember him just being a very weird, creepy person that would walk down the street. And he was one of those guys that you would cross the street when you seen him, just because he's just a weirdo.
With an arrest finally made in Stacy's case, Chris felt a sense of relief.
It was like a big weight had just been lifted off our shoulders, and you could breathe a little bit, but at the same time, I had in the back of my head of, well, it's still got to go to trial.
Harris pled not guilty. During the trial, Stacy's loved ones watched Harris, looking for any signs of remorse.
He just seemed so nonchalant, like he didn't care. It was just really upsetting.
Harris's behavior in court angered Chris.
It was quite frustrating. I remember asking Nancy at one point in time if she could get an officer to sit with me so I didn't have those crazy thoughts in my head of going after this person. But I held it together, and, you know, it was horrible.
But perhaps the most painful part of the trial for Stacy's family was listening to details of the crime.
There was a lot of things we heard and at the trial that we never knew about. And it was just really upsetting to know some of the things that they told us.
Stacy's cousin, Brittany Stone.
I would say devastating trial. It was definitely up close and personal, and I got to hear detail from myself. It gave me a lot more information about what had actually happened to her, and that's, like, awful.
The evidence prosecutors presented made it clear that Harris had stalked Stacy that afternoon and lured her into the woods just moments after she finished lunch with her boyfriend. Deputy State's Attorney Nancy Hamm.
I think Stacy got up and walked away when her mother pulled in, and Lloyd Harris got up and followed her and probably offered her marijuana, and she probably took him up on it.
But once they got into the woods, Harris attacked Stacy. Using ropes from his campsite, he tied her up and sexually assaulted her, before ultimately strangling her to death.
I mean, she was 15, he was 34. She never would have voluntarily had sex with him.
The jurors agreed. It took just 3 hours of deliberation to reach their verdict. Guilty. It was a moment Stacy's family had waited for a very long time.
I just started crying, and it was a good feeling of relief. He was guilty.
At sentencing, Chris stood and faced Harris in the courtroom. In an emotional victim impact statement, Chris wanted Harris to know exactly what he stole from his family.
I just told him that he was a coward, that Stacy had a beautiful smile, and that he took that smile away from me. He took that away from everybody else that knew her, and I personally hoped he rotted in jail.
On January 3rd, 2018, 54-year-old Lloyd Harris was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole, which is exactly where Stacy's loved ones feel he belongs.
I hope that he never has a chance to get out, and he should be there for the rest of his life. And I hope that it haunts him every day what he did. I could imagine that's awful to go to sleep knowing what you did to somebody and their family. So I'm glad that he's where he is.
While Lloyd Harris eventually wrote an apology letter to Stacy's family, he still refused to take full responsibility for the murder.
In the letter he wrote, I'm sorry if they say I did this, if I'm the person that did this, it was an accident. I'm sorry for all the hurt I brought you.
The letter did little to answer the questions Stacy's family still have to this day.
I would definitely like to ask him why. Like, whoa, you know, why did he have to do that? But I don't think I'll ever get that answer.
In the eyes of those who investigated him, Lloyd Harris can only be characterized as evil.
I think he's a predator. He's a man without a conscience or a soul. He had absolutely no remorse, and he is in the exact right place.
Detective Kevin Forrest.
I don't know how, as a grown man, that you can not accept responsibility for something that you did to a 15-year-old girl. He had time on his own to be out and to be free and to live his life, and Stacy didn't have that opportunity because of his actions. I don't know how any grown man or any adult, for that matter, can live like that and live, you know, continue to live a somewhat normal life knowing that you've done those things. I don't understand it.
for Detective George Garcia, helping to put Lloyd Harris away was a high point of his career.
Felt great. It's not every day that a detective gets to work on a cold case and actually be part of solving a cold case, so I felt very good.
Both police and Stacy's family feel that there's a message to other families still waiting for answers decades after their loved ones were killed.
Just never give up. Never give up the hope, even if it's 20, 30 years. And that there's always going to be people out there working for you, and hopefully you have a great team that I was lucky enough to have. And just, again, keep the faith alive that things can change.
The verdict has allowed Chris and everyone who loves Stacy to put the decades of uncertainty behind them and focus on the wonderful but too few memories they have of her.
I remember all the times that I would see her smile. It was a very radiant smile, and all the pictures that we have of her, she was just smiling, and I think she would just bring out the good in people, and she had a glow about her that I can see in pictures.
All they can do now is imagine how Stacy's life would have unfolded if she hadn't been taken away from them.
I don't know for sure, but she probably definitely would have had some kind of career helping people, or maybe animals. She definitely would have had an impact. She probably would have been a big supporter for me, and I would have been a big supporter for her. And I think she would have done something good.
For Chris, it was tough growing up without his big sister.
Very, very hard, because she was always there for me. Even now, it sucks not being able to pick up a phone and say, hey, you wanna go hang out or something? I think about her every day.
Before Lloyd Harris's trial began, Stacy's family had never been certain of the exact day she had been murdered. It wasn't until after Harris's conviction 21 years later that Stacy's mother was finally able to engrave the date of Stacy's death on her tombstone. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial. Or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.